This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to another special guest episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. Very excited for the conversation I'm going to have. Today I've got Brian Smith on the show. There's so many reasons why I'm excited, and as I go through this intro, you might pick on some of the reasons why, and it's going to be a fun conversation. Brian is the Senior Manager of National Sales Strategy, which is a lot and encompasses a lot. I don't know how many thousands of people that may or may not cover underneath him, at Comcast, and a lot of people have their different thoughts about Comcast. We're going to talk about that here on the show. He has over 10 years of sales experience. He's been at Comcast for 7+ of those years. He's worked with dozens of sales teams. He's now and in the past worked with large corporate organizations. He's working extensively in dialer operations, which you know is the world that I play in, sales training, and improving sales compliance, which of course anyone who knows me knows that I'm all about the compliance part as well in doing things the right way. And he's all about leading people and being successful in that. Brian, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Awesome. Glad to be here. Thanks.
So I'm excited about every guest that I have on the show. Some people like yourself, it's like this fascinating combination of somebody who wasn't destined for sales, and we'll talk about that probably in the after show because I'm too excited about what we want to talk about now, where you weren't necessarily directed into sales as a young Brian, and then you're doing the sales that you're doing, and you're leading people in a way that I agree with, and then you work for a company that is historically not known for being a great company as a customer. And let's talk about that part first, because I think it's fascinating. Here's my stance on this. And a lot of people hear Comcast and they're like, oh, Comcast is terrible, right? And at one point it was, right? Like, and you can talk about it, agree or disagree. But like at one point Comcast was terrible. I felt like Comcast knew they had a monopoly in most markets. And if you didn't like it, you didn't have a choice, so go back to your rabbit ears or dialing up your modem or whatever it is. And what I've seen, and this is why when we connected, I was like, this is amazing, because I saw and have seen from a customer's perspective over the last few years where it's totally different. Anybody who's experienced Comcast recently knows that, like I love chatting with people. They're so responsive. The technology is there. Like if you have an issue with your modem, they're like resetting it via text. Like you can SMS to get like your issues taken care of. Dialing in, getting someone to show up at the house. They actually show up at the time they're supposed to, which is so different. What is that like in the organization? Because I recognize it as a customer. You've been there before and then during that. So let's talk about the Comcast elephant in the room first.
Sure, I love to. So yeah, I would say my experience, as you mentioned, I've been there around 7 years at the Comcast organization, and when I joined, that was the word around town, right? And it was a challenge that we had. You know, when I speak to the leaders, you know, what can we do? What's the biggest challenge? And they always say customer experience, installation, that whole process needs to be smoother. It's the biggest complaint from our customers. And I'm in the sales org, so obviously it's a big pain for our sales reps to have that process be, you know, brought up, especially on sales calls, which makes everything really, really difficult. But I was brought in at the heat of that, and the company really had to really go into turn things around, obviously, right? There was a bad word in the marketplace for it, you know. And again, I joined right in the midst of it, and it was really exciting to see, because I saw a full mobilization of the company really come together. Even I was just telling you now, just to now, to this day, we still get weekly emails, quarterly emails on how we're doing on our customer experience ratings, eNPS, tNPS ratings, things like that. And it's just been such a massive, massive focus for the company. And it just hasn't seemed to change. Like, it's just stays, that is the focus where we want to live, breathe, and really, you know, perform best. So I do my best to, you know, apply that in the sales world, just to make it a frictionless process and everything like that for our reps. But I got to give credit to our customer care teams and everyone out there. They were really the ones that moved the boulder to really make that difference that you saw.
Well, and I will again say from a customer perspective, and someone who's noticed the change, because I observe everything like from a customer perspective, like, you know, through my life, is that whoever spearheaded that, wherever that, you know, started from and then trickled down, they've done a great job at pivoting the whole ship, and as far as the experience goes, because that's not easy, especially because a reputation comes from what's happening, and that's happening for a reason, because of the inside culture, and then to shift that takes a lot of effort. So I think that's amazing. You brought up something which is fascinating, and I wasn't thinking about in terms of Comcast, in terms of your job, in terms of like the sales side, which is when a company has a, let's say, not great reputation, not great service record, right? Let's just say that. And then you're on the sales side trying to sell new people, new businesses, something like what your service is, how much harder that makes the world of sales, which is already hard as it is. What extra efforts have you found that you've had to do and put into place? Not just, you know, sometimes people are selling against their competitors who have a bad reputation. But, you know, this part here, you're selling against the old Comcast reputation. And then there's the new you.
I would preface and say, because I did come from another company beforehand that was like a web hosting GoDaddy style S company, which didn't have the name recognition, right? And setting up a team and selling with a team that has no name recognition up to against a GoDaddy or somebody else or Comcast, way harder. way harder of a sale, and to get that customer to stay on the line and speak to you about what it is that you have to offer. So I would say, just out the gate, you're ahead of the game. Just being known and who you are really going to help the sales process altogether. As far as what we've done to accommodate that, you know, it's become very much of a price game, right? When it comes to buying and selling, you know, broadband and things like that. So people are so hyper-focused on price that it seems to be the major factor in what our reps are really honing into. And, you know, we don't like to trade on that. You know, price isn't the best selling point to go off of. But it is the trigger that keeps people on the phone, right? So we lean on that a little bit to get folks on the phone and then train heavily on our, you know, as you may talk against, a sales process, right? And we've gone through multiple different sales processes and the Miller Hymans and the McKenzie's and all the different groups that you have. All of which we've never really subscribed to a script, right? It's always been a guideline saying, hey, you got to go with the flow. You got to feel the conversation and connect with the person that's on the call. So, you know, we really don't prescribe to scripts. So we really prescribe to a process that we want reps to follow. And even that doesn't fall into the market you want sometimes as well, right? Because there's so many things going on in the world that, you know, jumping into discovery, you got to have that small talk about the pandemic, right? You know, like if people are stressing about it, you got to have that connection. If you don't get that rapport out the gate, you're never going to get full honesty out of the people you're speaking with. So that's kind of been our main focus as a group when it comes to dealing with negativity or anything else as well.
So, and I can see that, right? Like being known, but it being not a positive connotation is, I can see how that's still better than being unknown against Goliath, right? And you know, and where they at least somebody knows who you are, and now you just need to like reframe their feelings about you or tell them why, you know, it is still the best option. You mentioned something though. You said the team doesn't use scripts. Not to debate that or anything, because it sounds like you've hired some really smart people to help you from the outside perspective. But more so, how do you find the most effective way to then manage, coach, train, lead, and hold compliant agents, salespeople, inside, outside, without, you know, scripting as the guy, as the playbook, let's say?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about how you set the table with the reps, speaking on their level and understanding what it is, what it's like from their perspective, really, is really the biggest thing. Like, whenever rolling out any kind of new piece of software, it's fear. It's, you know, something like that can come through and you don't know what you're going to, you know, what you're up against. So when we roll out new pieces of whether it's new rollouts, your product, whatever it is, you have to understand what it's coming like from the rep's perspective and how they're going to react to the system thing that's going to happen there. I think I lost track of what you were saying a little bit though there.
So, but then for the extension of that, right? So there's the rolling it out and getting them to accept it. And then how do you manage that? How do you coach, let's say, a phone call? How do you train somebody or retrain them about the phone calls that they're having or the meetings they're having when it's scriptless, right? Like maybe there's a guide, but there's no script. You know, again, the rapport, the discovery, you know, that kind of stuff. How have you found the best way to then manage a process, you know, with sales calls?
I mean, the leadership buy-in is key, right? Having that regular touch point with our leaders, listening to calls and diving in and dissecting. I think there's nothing that's been more effective, tried and true, is call monitoring, call, you know, audits and listening to calls, playing calls back for reps has really been the key, you know, understanding where and how they phrase things to fit into the structure of what they're doing. A lot of reps have really great practices that they do, just don't realize that they're doing it in their own way. They just need to be identified in how they are. As far as keeping it all in track, it's a family affair, man. Like, we, you know, there's nothing that can be done alone. We have enablement teams, coaches, HQ oversight, people that are coming through, not like cracking whip, but coming through explaining the why, right? And that's really the key, is the why behind we're doing this. Why do we require to split lists up with wireless and landlines? Why do we have to say calls are recorded on a recorded line? You know, it's for privacy reasons. We try to give them the why behind all the different things. And we try to also, you know, use metrics that make sense for them too. That's the other aspect of it, right? Because it's real easy from an HQ perspective to say, yeah, we need more conversion, better conversion rates, more units, right? Whereas a rep from that's going to work all day, 9 to 5, conversion rate is a hard metric to grasp, right? And I feel like it's much more beneficial to work with metrics that make sense for them, like sales per hour or something. Hey, I got to make sure I get a conversation every hour. Did I get my conversation in the last 2 hours? No, I got to get 2 this next hour. Like, the waterfall of things that needs to happen, the small wins are really kind of the win to get to the full picture of it, if you will. So it's a family affair. It's a lot of people coming together and, you know, celebrating the small wins for the reps.
And that makes sense. I love how you put that as far as like what somebody can manage and what they're looking at. If you're talking about the whole conversion for a day, well, that's great, except, you know, do I know if I'm winning or not? And it's 11 o'clock in the morning. Like, am I winning or am I not? I don't have a deal on the board, but like, how am I doing? I love you breaking it down into that and focusing on those things that somebody can control, right? Like, am I having a conversation? If I have my conversation in this hour, great. Like, if I do enough of those, that will equal a conversion. Again, you can only control actions and activities, right? You can't control the actual outcomes and results. All you can do is put in the effort and the work. From a compliance side, because one of the things I know about what you do is focus on the compliance piece as well, which is probably lead generation, the marketing, those things, but then also in the moment, are there tools that you're using from a technology automation standpoint to ensure compliance, let's say in the conversations or, you know, from that hat that you wear?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you need to scale something up from a team of 20 to a team of 1,000, you can't have processes that are very manual or like it's relying on the rep or the you know, the salesperson to do a certain action or check a certain thing. It's not scalable when you really ramp that up. So one thing I've learned working with Comcast and our I call them the bulletproof legal team, right? They know how to make sure that we are buttoned up and we are doing all the right things the right way, right? So the software that we use, the dialing software we use, has to have real-time integration with our master DNCs, our master DN email and do not email lists and things of such. So making sure that those things are real-time is actually the most challenging and most important thing to do, so that, you know, a rep doesn't have to, you know, go to another page to put someone on the do not call list. It's as simple as just selecting a disposition or an email reply, having an AI tool that can identify what they're saying in an email reply and get that they don't want to subscribe anymore. We have software that will actually identify that and do it without the rep having to really do anything. And it just takes them out of cadences or removes them from the ability to call moving forward. Those things are really key. Our reps are very busy. They don't have the time of the day. So if I can save them a click or two, that's a win. And also, you know, show our legal team that we've reduced that oversight in a scalable way.
Yeah. And I think that reducing the clicks, saving that time, especially when we're talking at scale, right? It's like, how many times does an agent have to do that per day? You remove that. Yeah. How many agents do you have total? You know, how many hours in the week or the year, like that actually starts to add up at scale. And then there's just the fact that, you know, humans are human, right? Like, nobody's perfect. No one's going to get it right every single time, right? People aren't robots. So the more you can do with that, you know, and just take that burden off of someone needing to be perfect on top of everything 100% of the time. That's what keeps, you know, I know compliance attorneys up at night is imagining where people will forget to check a box or uncheck a box or whatever that looks like. Talking about scale, just to put things in perspective, give the audience an idea of, I guess, either how many people you directly manage and see, you know, as far as under your part of the org chart or what that looks like, you know, at Comcast in general with sales.
Sure. So I oversee compliance specifically under our SMB sales organization, which is approximately around 2,000 to 3,000 people, right? 2,000 reps and another 1,000 leaders on top of that, managers, directors on top. We do have a whole huge residential side of the business. And then we also have, you know, on the business side, we have mid-market and government ed and other different channels of those as well. I don't work with them, but I do work very closely with our, like I said, those 2,000 reps that are calling all the time, right? So that could be inbound sales, outbound sales, field sales, knocking, door knocking. So, you know, we have a lot of tools, right? So for our field sales, they have cell phones, they have different tools that help them with cadences. We have inside sales reps that have dial auto dialers. They're trying to, you know, crank through lists that don't have a lot of information on them, but they're trying to get low hanging fruit. And yeah, so it's, there's a fair amount that's underneath me. I am responsible for all the telesales compliance piece. So all of our list managers that are getting lists from our marketing warehouses, data warehouses, or making sure they're scrubbing against all the proper state scrubs, DNC, national stuff that we have to do, wireless for auto dialing and such like that. So yeah, we're very tuned into those things. We're very close with all the PACE conferences and everything that are going on to make sure that we're attuned to the latest laws and changes that are coming out. But yeah, it's a large group. It's a great group. Like I said, about half is field, half is inside. And most of our workforce is working from home now. Our inside sales team is not in a call center. So this is all new to us. And it's been a fun time getting them remote. And we've been holding up real well with performance. So we're happy with them.
Well, and I can just imagine that as a logistical and or, you know, just compliance and or management and or leadership, where you've got, was in the office, now they're remote. And then the other half of the team has always been outside field, knocking on doors, going door to door, visiting people, visiting businesses, and then managing them, keeping them compliant, making sure everyone's staying and doing the right things and hitting their metrics. Like that, you know, most people have one or the other. They don't have both. And they think what they're doing is really hard in managing one or the other. So, yeah, I can't imagine doing both. That's got to be like a ton all the time.
Absolutely. And again, like I said, it's definitely a group effort at Comcast, right? I am not, these 2,000 don't obviously directly roll to me. I'm a dotted line to many of them. They all have their own structures and roles up, but I travel a lot. I'm in all the divisions. I'm meeting with reps and seeing what's going on because, again, end of the day, I am the owner of that. So, you know, complaints come through, they land on my desk, and we have to figure out how to make this thing better and make it work.
So from your perspective, with what you focus on and just in general with your experience with sales teams, call centers, what's the biggest challenge with scaling up sales operations that you've found in the past or even that you're still dealing with?
I think it's, you know, it's, I don't want to use the word, I feel like it's the bad word to use, of oversight, right? But just to be able to have the ability to see what's going on and being able to improve upon it. Right. We've operated in a space for a really long time where it's mostly just, I call it smile and dial, right? You're in a dialer, you're making dials. And the advice was, oh, send some emails too. And, you know, you have no visibility into what Outlook is being sent or what the reply rates is happening there. And it's just like a big black hole of missing space of activity that happens. And we don't know what's going on. And that's the biggest area of opportunity that we find, right? Like if you speak to our SLT leadership teams here, their biggest ask is how can we get more conversations and how can we, you know, we have reps with funnels of 80 or 100 people or 80 businesses in their funnel. And, you know, like, you know, 80% of those close out in the first week, you know, the first 2 weeks, where the rest of them are kind of going for like months after and they're holding on to them. That's the bread and butter. Like, how do we maximize conversations with folks that are not as interested, or we can drip to them a little bit and really give a personal one-to-one. I think that's the key, right? Everyone's doing lots of mass emailing. Everyone's doing lots of big campaign stuff. But when you can scale something that's still personal one-to-one, and reps can still send an email and personalize that first line so that when someone pulls up on a phone, you know, they see that line, that first line, hey, it's Bob, I saw your new logo on LinkedIn. Like, the answer rates of those emails are tremendously higher than any other static text email. Hey, Brian, check it in. See how you're doing. Type of email, right? So to me, that's the big key, is being able to scale something up where you can see what's going on with the reps and see what's working, right? So you have a rep that's sending a killer template out and he's like, yo, I got this. I get so many replies on this thing. Let's share that. Let's scale that. How is it working? How well is it working? And how can we fit it into what everyone else is doing?
Makes sense. And again, it's that being able to scale that. Mm-hmm. And where that's tough, especially remote, outside field, outside sales, field sales, where it's like, all right, what are those best practices? What are working and that are compliant that, you know, Mr. Brian is happy with and the lawyers are happy with, you know, and how do you roll that out? When we're talking about scaling, one of the things you mentioned kind of early on was getting people's buy-in and explaining the why. Let's talk about that. Like, where does that fit in, and what else are factors that you've seen for success at like scaling these operations with, you know, getting people bought in and and also the execution behind that?
Yeah, I feel like when you're in a large company, right, that has a lot of, you know, a lot of leadership, a lot of things like that, the messages can get, you know, mixed up very easily and very quickly. You know, with the best of intentions that we all have, we go in there saying, this is going to help you do this, 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 and that. The fear that reps feel for change is immediate and it's right away, right? So no matter how well you phrase it, it's still going to come off as a scary new thing that's got to happen, right? So, you know, my learning with this has been deep. We've rolled out many, many tools and I got lots of fear and had lots of, you know, heart to hearts with reps, you know, saying, telling me, hey, you know, this pandemic, I'm working from home, I'm making 120K now, and you're introducing this thing, I can't shake it. I want to retire here. I'm happy. Please don't shake up my world. Like, they're that scared of what's going on. So, you know, I feel like that's got to be the, you know, the ad car, right? It's got to be the awareness that goes out ahead of time, right? Like, why are we doing this? This is not to add more to your work. This is not administrative. This is not a crack the whip, bureaucratic thing that we're going to, like, introduce new metrics for you, right? The goal is not to shake the boat, but to make the boat faster, right? So just test this thing out, try it out, see how it goes. You know, leading with a message like that has really resonated a lot. Smaller training groups has resonated a lot, and really giving that why behind it is critical, because the chatter and the rumors can get around. Here comes headquarters with this corporate tool. They have oversight on us now. You know, and the thing is, you know, I'll go to our top reps. I'll go to our senior reps to roll something out because they're our best sellers. And they'll be like, and the thought there is like, I already got promoted to be the best seller. Why do I need this oversight and this new seller? It's always that dichotomy going back and forth. But the more that we can drip campaign into them that this is going to help them, it's not more, it's not add like net new stuff that they have to do, has really just been super powerful for us. And they really buy in and the adoption is much stronger then.
And that's an interesting perspective too, to think of all the times I've rolled stuff out as well, where that's just so common. People in sales thinking like, don't mess up what's working for me, right? Like, it's working well enough and I'm happy with it and I'm making money. And sometimes the business just needs to change. Sometimes it needs to get better. Sometimes maybe those reps are closing deals and making money in a way that's not benefiting the company. And so something has to change. Sometimes it's just scaling and technology that should be rolled out. So, yeah. It's interesting to think about that, and especially when you're talking at scale, like you said, with this many people that you've got. How do you, and or how have you seen, and or how does your company deal with this, where it's not changing too much at once, or I don't even know what to call it, like sales enablement technology change tool creep, right? Where it's like, you know, just constantly changing and constantly doing that, because, you know, you can't do that all the time. But what processes have you found limit that? So it's like, if something's going to change, it's really important, and not just because somebody somewhere in the org chart had this spasm, or some slick salesperson talked that person into buying a new piece of platform that now everyone has to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, it's real. That's a real challenge. You know, especially in a large company that I'm involved with, there's HR programs coming out. There's, you know, like all sorts of new software, new products, new promotions. And, you know, it's really important to work. And again, I'm coming from a large scale enterprise, so it might be different for different organizations. But for us, you know, each organization has like, we were broken up into three different divisions, and you work closely with the HR and the different teams in there so that when they send messaging out, it's all aligned with everybody else in the company. So what we found is that reps get inundated, and teams as leaders too get inundated, like, hey, here's something from sales. I got something from HR. Someone from care has got this other project. And none of them seem to care that my day is only 5 hours, 6 hours, you know, of work here. So we found that that's key, right? Is working together with the other, with really HR has been the one pulling us together, right? And saying, hey, what are the collision schedules? Why are we doing this? You know, what's the why behind it? And what else can we say that really emphasizes, to your point, that this isn't something that was just sold to somebody and now we're just testing it out to see how it goes? And you guys are our test bunnies. No, right? Like, we want to make it more of like, this has been already tested and proven, and like, we know that this is going to help you, you know, like, so we really strive to start small and then roll out big, right? So if there's a new piece of software, it's starting with a few reps and we're getting their buy-in so that we can steal quotes from them or make videos of them and drip email to reps saying, hey, I use this and I got a sale on step 8. You know what I mean? I would have never done it if it wasn't for this software, right? And reps like, oh, okay, maybe I can do that too. So that's the thought on that.
Well, and I think that part that you just said, like that last segment, is so key for any leaders, managers, frontline, you know, team leads, supervisors, anybody to like take notes, listen to that part again, because that's what you want. You want to test it small and then get the testimonials and the validation from those people that it works. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Obviously, if it doesn't work, then that experiment failed, which is fine. That's why it's an experiment.
Yeah.
But to get that and then use that to help others feel that it's safe, right? Like, this is okay. It is safe. It, for the same reason, because it's all sales, same reason that salespeople working with a prospective customer, it's the same thing. Like, you have some validation. You have some customers, so you can help them feel safe that they're not the only one who would sign mm-hmm. up. And then they move forward with as well. It's literally all the same as far as sales go.
It is. Yeah, I mean, I know everyone says it, but fail fast, right? Got to get in there. Fail quick. Figure out what the issues are, because you know, that's how you move the needle.
Yeah. How have you seen, kind of going back to the culture and then also this experimentation and change and having people understand it, is there anything you can point to from a company culture standpoint where – like there's something like new core values? Was there a different mission statement? Is there something that you lean on when you're rolling out something new where you're like, hey, remember, this is one of our values, or this is what we're focused on, or this is our mantra, you know, that supports that when something has to change?
Oh, wow. I was thinking that at first I was like, you know, we'd like to really, I mean, we always tried and true with that customer experience like that. I mean, that's the core of everything that we do. How is this helping the experience out? And that's what we focus on there. The other aspect I was thinking of, and it's blanking on my mind now, I forgot what I was going to say. The other aspect of that one was, what was the question again?
So is there anything like specific that the company did from the top down of putting in any values, any mantra, anything to give leadership a guidepost of being like, hey, team, remember, this is why we're changing. Not just like, here's why we're changing this one thing, but like, remember, our core value is X. Like, is there anything that shifted? Again, talking about this, like where Comcast was as an organization versus where they are now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, one big shift that I think was really big, and I know a lot of companies did this, but employee NPS has been really kind of a heavy focus for us, right? And how the reps give us feedback on what's happening. As leaders, even at HQ, we are constantly given weekly feedback on ENPS, on how it's going and what the feedback is on our projects. But the effect of that is making that change and telling them and reiterating that we've heard them and that we're going through with these changes. So me personally, my feedback has gotten heard from an HQ perspective as well. And I feel like it's just trickled down the entire company, right? It's our chance to speak back anonymously to let know how we feel about what's going on. And that's had a really big impact on it, right? So we focus on that. We subscribe and drip email how we could do better stuff. But that plus the aspect of, like, again, HR helps us out a lot with, like, multicultural things as well, too. We have a lot of ERG groups and things like that, which kind of promote different sorts of development and things like that. So it really kind of gives it a more well-rounded kind of effect that we can have with them and use that to be like, hey, join your peers, get active, get involved more. And all that can kind of be tied into some new things that they're working on and new things that are rolling out and kind of make it more fun and more interesting.
Well, and from what I've seen with organizations and in my experience is that that's so powerful, and companies don't necessarily realize that and how powerful it is. A lot of sales orgs just think, oh, I'm just going to hire some salespeople and they're going to be motivated by money because that's all salespeople care about, not realizing like there's a lot more to it and what people, you know, we'll get out of it, especially if you want someone who's selling in a compliant way that's part of a mission and is rowing the same direction as everyone else on the boat, mm-hmm. versus that, you know, lone wolf, reckless salesperson who only cares about their bottom line, and they're going to be a danger to the company. You know, that is definitely not what you want, especially, you know, as the guy in charge of some compliance.
Yeah. Another big thing we're leveraging a lot is, like everybody else is, like call analytics and things like that, right? And analyzing calls and the tones of calls as well, too. That's been a big help as far as like our residential partners have made a big investment on like sentiment models and how the call ended and how the customer felt at the end of that call based on the tone and the words that they use has also been a really, really big eye opener for us to leverage and start to build our own models into that so we understand how it's relatable for the business side of the house. But I think that technology is really invaluable. It can really open eyes to a lot of folks and leaders into like different biases sometimes that reps have and they don't realize that they may have. And I found that over the years to be a very interesting topic with salespeople as far as like some people have bias when they get on the phone with certain people and they don't realize how they're speaking, and like software like that can really bring that about and open people's eyes, which is really cool.
Yeah, it is fascinating, you know, the biases about different types of people, different groups of people, you know, it could be age, it could be any factor I've seen. And then also, you know, the bias against different lead sources or lead types or business types, right? If you're doing SMB, it's like, I never like calling roofers because roofers are blah, 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 right? Like you and usually those biases come from a negative experience, right? So one time you had to call a roofer, they didn't like what you were offering, they weren't nice to you, and then you make your decision that all roofers are X, Y, and Z.
It's hard to change those opinions.
That becomes ingrained, and then someone makes that decision, I like this, but I don't like that. And then how do you change that? I love what you're talking about with the sentiment and you know, from that side, the recording, help people shift. Where does that fall on like the frontline leadership, right? I'm thinking you have such a huge structure, and then there's the frontline leaders, because there's so many. You said you have 2,000 salespeople and 1,000 leaders, so there's obviously a lot of layers, but you know, where are the frontline people just really there in the trenches helping people? Where does it come from, you know, a different part of the leadership team with that coaching, the leadership? I'm, you know, just thinking of other organizations obviously that are going to be much smaller than yours, but you know, want to structure it in a certain way.
Sure. No, I mean, again, we have, just like anything else, approach it from a perspective of, you know, we're helping you out. This is going to save you time, right? Because that's always an attractable offer to come out the gate with, if you will. But no, we really kind of built it in a way so that it helped their coaching out, right? So if I'm a coach and I need to understand what's going on with my reps, we created this sort of like generalized score of things to go after for different parts of the sales process. But really, using that tool so that they don't have to sift through calls, right? Like if I know that this rep is having struggles with our opening and getting discovery and getting longer calls and getting deeper into the conversation, we built it in a way so that those calls are teed up for the rep right away. They see they have low scores on certain discovery sections. A supervisor can go in there and just see, all right, here's 5 calls where they had a poor score on discovery, and they could dive right into that and not have to sift through all the calls in the day and find one that they're going to do for their one-on-one later on. So we've leveraged it in a way to save the leader's time for their coaching. And then, you know, in that way, they kind of like to use it and use it more, you know, and then it's also available for the managers and director levels above them to kind of show the trends that are happening, the trends that they're seeing with different, like you said, industries and such. Makes it helpful.
Yeah. And that's so valuable. Like the companies I deal with, I mean, it's one of the things I help them understand, because most of them know it, is like, if you're still listening for calls or searching for calls and doing all of that manual, depending on how many reps you have, by lunch the very first day, you've already lost, because there's way more hours of recordings than you will ever get to. And so, you know, where do you leverage? It's 2022, right? Leverage technology to get you 90% of the way there, and then you do what you do best as a leader, a coach, a manager, and get it the rest of the way. So, all right. So for people who want to find out more, obviously Comcast is a well-known name, but I know that if they want to find more about, you know, specifically the vision that you are focused on, business.comcast.com, for anyone who doesn't happen to know anything about Comcast, they can look there. And then I know for you, like we connected on LinkedIn and chatted there. Most of the people I chat with that come on the show, it's, you know, somewhere in there is LinkedIn. So for people who want to chat with you directly, find out more about what you do, or just chat with you about what you have going on, Brian Smith on LinkedIn. I'm sure there's a bunch of Brian Smiths, but I know people search Brian Smith, Comcast. It will also be in the show notes your links on there. Mm-hmm. Brian, I'm excited for part two because there's a bunch of stuff I want to ask you, like about your degree, about some enablement programs, about returning to office. There's a bunch of stuff I want to cover. But for now, for part one, thanks for coming on. Thanks for accepting the request and taking the challenge to come on here and represent, you know, the sales process that you do and talk a little bit about Comcast and, you know, kind of share what you're seeing as well. Thanks for being on the show.
No, pleasure having me. I appreciate it. Had a great time. Thank you so much.
All right. And that will be the end of part one. Make sure to catch part two. And I appreciate everyone for being here as a part of my journey to help shift sales from being a dirty word to something that the world respects and looks forward to, while at the same time helping salespeople close more deals and make more money in a way that feels good to them. It's why I bring people like Brian on here to share what he is doing and what he's a part of in organizations where they're doing that for their teams and supporting them as much as possible. So I appreciate your time for being here, being a part of this. Anything that you took from this, hopefully you can use. And until next time, helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.